The following AA talk was recorded at the weekly Never Had a Legal Drink group of Alcoholics Anonymous. The opinions of the speaker do not necessarily represent those of the group or AA as a whole. Rather, this story represents one person's experience. If you have a desire to stop drinking and would like help, contact Alcoholics Anonymous at www.aa.org, or you can find AA listed in your local telephone book. AA's Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Hi, I'm Cookie. I'm an alcoholic. And my home group is Potpourri, which is located on 16th Street between 2nd and 3rd, and they meet every night at 6. And when I walked in, when I crawled in, they told me I was welcome. And it's been my home group ever since. I was told that I could belong to young people because there was room to grow, and I certainly have room to grow. So I feel quite comfortable here. I know a lot of people here, and I'm honored to do service at IKIPA International Convention in August as your marathon chair, and I've been working really hard at that, and I've been getting a lot of help from a lot of you. I'll tell you a little bit about how it was. I wasn't born in this country, so when I came over and I started school, I didn't speak English, and I was always the odd man out because I didn't know what you were talking about. Not only that, but I didn't eat the same lunch that you ate, and I tried to explain to my mother what PB&J was, and she looked at me and she tried to grind up peanuts, and it didn't work. And so I was different, and because I was different, I learned to read and I learned to play music, and I pretended that I was wherever I was, but not here. And as a result, I did very well in school because I had no distractions, and I entered high school at 12 and college at 15. And I got to college, and it was away from home, and everybody seemed to know what they were doing. I mean, there were all these people that had friends and all these people that belonged to clubs and whatever, and I didn't know what to do. And so I walked into where they were passing drinks around in a brown paper bag, and they offered me the brown paper bag. And since nobody was offering me very much of anything, and I was 15, I figured, okay. And I took a swig, and it turned out to be peppermint schnapps. And it's dreadful. But I got very drunk. It's not the drink that I recommend to anybody, but we kept passing it around. They told jokes I didn't understand, but I laughed out loud. And, you know, I really felt like I was one of the bad guys, you know, because those were the guys that were passing around the bottle in the brown paper bag, you know. And then they turned me on to this game. Now, I'm far from home, and the game is that you get as drunk as you can and you play chicken because you have a car. And you line up cars, and whoever swerves first is the person that loses. Well, I wasn't going to lose because I already felt like a loser. So I just got drunk and went for it. And that was the way I sort of led that life, you know. And people would say, she's crazy, don't mess with her. It was like if there was something to be broken, I broke it. If there was something to do wrong, I did wrong. And if there was something to be against, I was against it. And as a result, I met a lovely alternate rock and roll band, and I moved to San Francisco, and I lived on Haight-Ashbury. And you've probably all heard of it, but probably a lot of you, you know, it's history to you, but it was life to me. And I ended up with two kids, one at 17, and one 17 months later. And I lived on a horse ranch, and I had 17 horses and a lot of hippies. And we didn't wear tops or underwear, and the local cowboys in California were very excited with us. But we kept getting busted because what we wore patchouli, and they thought it was pot. Of course, there was that also, but we didn't say. And we were anti-Vietnam, and we had a creek, and we had pictures of some of the Republicans, and I learned to shoot with target practice at these people and stuff like that. So that was me growing up. And then we started touring the country, and we didn't start out rich. We started out, you know, like $10 a day and thumb rides, and everybody did the best they could. And then we got very famous, and we started going around in limousines. Well, by that time, I was like smoking and drinking and whatever, and wearing flowers in my hair and using these paisley tablecloths that they used to have and cutting holes in them. And that was my outfit, with lots of feathers and beads. And I thought I looked pretty special. And I would start out really trying, you know, and I would get into one of these cars. Now, limousines are like floating bars, you know. They've got like booze all lined up against the side. And I really didn't know what it was, but I would take the white stuff and then the brown stuff and then maybe the red stuff. And by the time I landed wherever it was I was going, I had thrown up all over the back seat of the car. I had messed up my feathers something dreadful. I really reeked. And I don't think the limo driver liked me anymore. And I would get to a hotel, and I didn't understand. I thought, because we were so famous by that time, that they had cleared a path for me. I think it was because I smelled. And I would get up to my room. I would pick up the room service phone, and I would go, "A bottle of vodka, please." And they would say, "How many glasses?" And I would say, "I don't know, whatever you think." They thought I was having a party. I just needed my booze, you know. And I drank a lot of Southern Comfort, and that's also not something I recommend. It tastes dreadful, and it really makes you throw up a lot. And I threw up on more people than I ever were able to make amends to. And I started fights with an equal amount of people whose faces I can't even remember. And it was all good. I mean, I ended up in places I didn't know where I was. We always stayed in like places that looked the same to me, so I never knew if my room was like 132 one night and 486 the next. And I wandered around a lot of, like, you know, hotel lobbies and stuff, with until somebody would sort of grab me and say, "You belong in there," you know. And meanwhile, I had my children and my horse ranch. We did a train trip through Canada, and we went from Montreal to Calgary, and we ran out of booze in the middle of Canada. And we stopped at a town that I've since revisited in sobriety. And the guy says, "You look familiar." And I had taken like money from everybody on the train, because it was all rock bands, and gone into the liquor store and bought out the entire town's worth of liquor. And then they had this like little very fancy Canadian bottle on the top. And the man explained to me that that was for New Year's. And, you know, they took it down. The mayor made a toast, and that was Happy New Year. And I said, "Oh, we want that too." And so we left the town high and dry. And that lasted till the next town. And they made a movie of that. And I don't look so good in a movie. But, okay. And I came home, and one of my daughters was riding her bicycle one day, and she got hit by a 15-year-old boy who was drunk on beer, and he was driving his father's pickup truck. And I didn't know how to handle that. He killed her. And I just sat in a chair for 3 months, and I didn't do anything. I couldn't wash. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't eat. I couldn't talk to people. I didn't know how to grieve. I had never learned how to cope. I was just gone. And so my old man called my best friend, and he said, and she came over, and she said, "Hold out your arm." I held out my arm, and she gave me a shot of heroin, and that sort of eased the pain. And 4 hours later, she gave me another one, and I started to function. I was able to wash and able to eat a little and able to move out of the chair that I had sat in for 3 months without moving. And I got strung out. And I did that for about 3.5 years, using everything I could find and as much of anything as I could get. And I ended up with staph infection and hepatitis and weighing 90 pounds and really being a mess. And I knew that I had to do something. And so I in those days, they didn't really have rehabs. I went into a mental hospital, and they told me there were three groups of people. There were the nuts at the top, the alcoholics in the middle, and the drug addicts at the bottom. And they asked me where I belonged, and I said, "I guess at the bottom." And they said, "Well, don't ever do another drug." And I never did another drug after that. And they, you know, they cleaned me up and fixed me up a little, and they told me that I should go out and drink socially. And that was after like 2 weeks, and I went, okay. And I had no idea what they were talking about. I still don't know what drinking socially is all about. But my conception of that was that if you have a drink, we'll socialize. And so that's my idea. Well, of course, you know who I hung out with, because no more druggies, but now I could hang out with people who drank us socially, you know. And so I tried drinking just like all these people, and it didn't work. I never knew what was going to happen. I never knew where I was going to end up. I never knew what was going to happen, and I just didn't like it. And so I left my husband. I left everybody. I came back to New York, and I white-knuckled it. I didn't have any kind of higher power. I didn't have anything, and I just wanted to stop. But I went to work, and I hoped that one of those taxis would run me over, or an air conditioner would fall on my head or something. And it didn't happen. I thought about drinking every day, every day, every day, all day. And I didn't do it. And finally, one day, a friend of mine from California came back and said, "Oh, I could stay with you, and I'll make dinner." And I thought that was nice, because I really didn't know too many people here anymore. I'd lived in California for 17 years. And so dinner was made with a beautiful bottle of wine, and I said, "I don't drink." And, well, it's a gourmet dinner, and there's all this wine, and it goes with the dinner, blah, blah, blah. And 6 no's later, I said, "It's only wine." And I didn't realize I had a disease, and I got drunk. And then I decided every night that I would take a bottle to bed with me, and that's what I did. And as long as you didn't know about it, I wasn't really, it was okay. And I went to work every day, and then I started getting the shakes, and I started feeling lousy, and I knew something was wrong. And I checked myself into one of those 5-day detoxes with the paper slippers, and they had AA. And I went to my first AA meeting, and I looked around at a room full of people that just looked like somebody else, and they told a story that was definitely not my story. I mean, the guy that told it looked like old pictures of Edgar G. Robinson on the movie Channel, and he'd go, "Huh, huh, huh," and I went, "Oh my gosh, this is like crazy." But I could identify with the feelings, and I had no place else to go. And the next night there was somebody else, they told a different story, and 5 days later I said, "Okay, what do I do?" And they said, "You go to AA, and you don't drink a day at a time." And then some smartass said, "Well, if you can count to one and not pick up one drink and not drink for one day, you can stay sober." And I wanted to say, "You know what?" And I said, "Okay." And and I thought, well, if you could do it, I could do it. And so I went with a great resentment and a lot of pride, and I didn't drink for a day at a time, and I didn't know what to do with all of you, and I didn't talk to anybody, and I left, and you told me to keep coming back. And then one day I went to the chairperson, like Ryan, and I thought he was the president of AA, and I said, you know, I really need a sponsor. I was told that I don't know how to pick one. You all look really strange, and I don't want what you have, and I'm sure you don't know what I have, so how do I get one, you know? And there was a lady standing in back of him, and she said, I'll be your sponsor, dear. And I went, okay. And she said, you'll call me every day. I said, what will I call you? And she gave me her name. And she told me to tell her what meeting I was going to, and that was about all I could do. And so I called her every day. I told her what meeting. It was the same meeting, because it met every day. You know? And I knew how to get there, and it was not far from where I live. And so, you know, I didn't want to count days. I didn't want to talk to you. I didn't want to do any of that. At the end of like a couple of months, she told me I was going to make coffee. And I said, wait a second. I said, I've been married. I've entertained. I know how to make coffee, and it's not necessary for me. And she said, you'll make coffee. And I said, you don't understand. I can even make espresso. And she said, you'll make coffee. I thought she was hard of hearing, and I didn't want to lose the only person that I was talking to. So I made coffee, but what would happen was I'd make the coffee over here, and if you came over and asked me if it was ready, I'd curse out the coffee pot. So he was like some lunatic cursing out an inanimate object, and people are saying, oh, thank you for making the coffee. Keep coming back. We also had a group conscience that said you put one vanilla finger and one Oreo cookie, and so I had to make this little mandala of, you know, one vanilla finger, one Oreo. But now we had a lot of homeless people because it's right next to a park, and they didn't care if I was making a design. They came in and just took a handful of cookies. Well, I now had a resentment for sure, and my sponsor said it's time to work the steps. And so she said, and also you need to get a higher power. And I went, you don't understand, whatever higher power I ever had took away my child. And she said, I don't care what you get. You just get something that isn't you. And so I picked the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous because it had kept everybody sober long before I knew about AA. And so I said please to this big book, and I read a little bit, and I said thank you at night for another day of sobriety. And it seemed to work because I was getting some time. And started to do service, because for me service was gratitude in action, and it was the only way I knew how to try and fit in a little bit. And the more mistakes I made, the more you told me to keep coming back. I was telling somebody before the meeting that I have learned to have a computer sponsor in AA, a young person, because I didn't grow up learning computers. And I was elected secretary of Southeast New York, which is now called registrar, and they handed me this list with a computer, and I said, where's the on switch? And how do you do it? And then they showed me how to do it, and then all of a sudden there was this delete button, and they said, do you want to delete this? And I went, yes. And they said, are you sure? And I went, absolutely. And all of a sudden I had a blank screen, and I went, oh my God, I'm going to have to resign from Southeast New York, which we call CNY, and I'm going to have to make amends to like 2,400 GSRs, and what will I do? You know, I felt like I should go to Tahiti and maybe have a drink. But I got up, and I made amends to all of CNY, and I said, I really don't know how to do this. And somebody said, if you make me coffee, you'll come and I'll restore the thing. So there's the coffee again. And they restored it from where cyberspace. I know there is such a place. I just don't know where it is. But you can, there are people in this room who can restore things. And for that, I'm very grateful, because I have made more mistakes, including last night deleting some of my icky pasta. And so I'll have to call my computer sponsor again. But meanwhile, I haven't had to drink, which has been a really good thing. And I've been able to do service. And I was finally elected your delegate for this area, which was beyond my wildest dreams, because I should have been a drunk in the street with, you know, no brain cells left, and instead I was going to this fancy hotel on Broadway with a suit. And they told me dress corporate. I've never been corporate my entire life, but I went out and bought a suit, and I showed up, which is what you're asked to do, you know. And my committee worked on Big Book 4, and that was my first higher power, and I couldn't believe that that would happen. And it was such a privilege. My sponsor, of course, reminds me that my name is not any place there, and so, you know, the honor is inside. But it was truly magnificent, you know. And I had to give a little two-minute speech about Southeast New York, and never had a legal drink, had just started, and I said, we have a tremendous amount of diversity in Southeast New York. We have all kinds of meetings. We have never had a legal drink, and we have a meeting that starts at Jones Beach at 6 in the morning when the sun comes up. And I went on and on about this, and people stood up when I finished my 2 minutes. And since then, I think legal's been on the map, because I get emails from people all over the world that say, is that me? Still going strong, and we're coming from wherever, you know, Outer Mongolia or something, and we have one young person with us, and could they go? And I go, yes, it meets on Thursdays. And so, you know, I've been really a part of this, and very proud of everybody here. And I'll finish off with telling you that all of you who live in this area, we experienced 9/11. And it was the shock of my life. I never knew how to cope. And what I did was a bunch of us through the General Service Office started a meeting downtown. And we had all the people from the crime scene, all the cops and all the fire people and all the FBI people and all the Red Cross people and all the people that were allowed down there. We had to wear what I call backstage passes and a hard hat in order to get in with our pictures and stuff like that. And for 3 months before they opened up the place, we ran meetings 24/7, and we ran them in 6-hour shifts with two people at a time. And I didn't know how to deal with half the things I heard and half the horrors I saw and the smell that I can still smell. But I do know that we read the daily reflections and that we were able to practice AA. And we had this big blackboard in the back of us, and people wrote their first name, their last initial, and where they were from, because they couldn't go home either. And that's in the archives today, along with pictures and cards. And if you ever go up to General Service Office, you'll see it. And when I chaired the big meeting for New York in a group, the two guys that were sober, that had made us the circle and triangle out of pieces of the towers. And we have that in a group, and we have it at General Service. And those are things that I take with me that are beyond my wildest dreams, and that are rewards that, if you would ask me when I first walked in and I thought you all were so strange, that I would never have expected to have experienced. And I could go on and on, but I know that we're about ready to stop, right? And so I want to thank you all for my sobriety, and I wish this group a long and healthy life. Bye.
The preceding AA talk was recorded at the weekly Never Had a Legal Drink group of Alcoholics Anonymous. The opinions of the speaker do not necessarily represent those of the group or AA as a whole. Rather, this story represents one person's experience. If you have a desire to stop drinking and would like help, contact Alcoholics Anonymous at www.aa.org, or you can find AA listed in your local telephone book.